The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.
One of the more difficult aspects in treating agitation and aggressive behavior in people with Alzheimer's is choosing medications that are effective but tend to have the least amount of side effects. In a study published online in the September 2007 issue of the American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry, researchers at Toronto's Baycrest Geriatric Center and the Center for Addiction and Mental Health teamed up to conduct a head-to-head trial of the antidepressant citalopram and the antipsychotic risperidone in non-depressed patients with dementia. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Bruce Pollack, Sandra A. Rotman Chair in Neuropsychiatry and Professor and Head of the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry at the University of Toronto. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can you trace the natural history of Alzheimer's and when in the course of disease are negative behavior changes evident? When do these changes start to occur?
Well, they can actually occur at any time in the course of the illness. Sometimes the psychiatric symptoms appear even earlier than the cognitive ones. But the more severe symptoms, such as aggression and hallucinations, are often in the middle stage and merging into the late stage of the illness.
Are there degrees to these behavior changes? For example, family members looking after someone who may be potentially developing Alzheimer's disease, what would they normally see? What are the sort of the cues that they would see that something is amiss?
Well, it's almost like a personality change that, again, in the earlier stages, it may be just increased irritability and some depressive symptoms. Mm-hmm. But as the illness progresses, about 90% of patients with dementia at some time in the course of their illness will show more severe psychiatric symptoms, such as psychosis and hallucinations. The hallucinations are most often visual in nature, but the issue with the psychosis is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Talking about the study which you mentioned, is that the belief has been that the psychotic symptoms in Alzheimer's, we have antipsychotic medications, so we should use these to treat these patients. And as you know, antipsychotics, both the earlier forms and the more recent second-generation antipsychotics, have been amongst the most prevalently used medicines in nursing homes. And recently, there's been increased concern about the mortality and morbidity of this from this class of medications.
What are some of the side effects that are seen with these particular antipsychotic medications?
Both the earlier drugs and with one of the major drugs, the drug that we used in this study, risperidone, there are Parkinsonian symptoms, which are very common with the medication. So become stiff and shaking. With the earlier medications, tardive dyskinesia, a very severe neurologic disorder, was very common. But then more routine, even with the second-generation medications, there can be increased confusion and cognitive impairment and sedation.
Now, when we turn to your study and looking at the use of these medications, I'm curious to know about the basic science that was involved beforehand. That is,
right.
What was the basic science that led to the development of the present study? Because reading some of the quotes that you said, you weren't even expecting or even hypothesizing
right.
that the antidepressants would have a similar effect.
Right. Well, we first of all, I always wondered about the prevalent, you know, again, it's the conventional wisdom that we should use antipsychotics to treat psychotic phenomena in Alzheimer's. Although when we look more closely, symptomatically, there are a number of differences. But we've known for many years that there are general deficits in dopamine function in Alzheimer's, and in fact, neurochemical evidence of real deficits in dopamine and in the other neurotransmitter, serotonin. On the other hand, as you know, the major, at least initial, pharmacologic effect of using all the antipsychotics is to block dopamine function, and it's believed that there are regions in the brain that where this is excessive in schizophrenia. So it never made a lot of sense to me that that we would be, you know, using drugs that significantly block dopamine function in patients where there was a deficit, even though superficially we were lumping them all together as having psychotic symptoms. On the other hand, there's been evidence for a long time that when there are deficits in serotonergic functioning, there's increased aggression and agitation and impulsivity. And that's seen in a range of conditions. And so we at least thought that citalopram, being a very potent drug increasing the amount of serotonin in the brain, would have a role in reducing agitation and aggression. And what we did is try to very carefully not include patients who had depressive symptoms. We used a special scale that looks at depression and Alzheimer's disease. So we eliminated those with depressive symptomatology, but we had some very severe psychotic symptoms, very severe delusions and hallucinations, as well as those without psychotic symptoms who were still so aggressive and agitated that there was difficulty, they couldn't be managed in a nursing home. And one of the first things we did was also try to see if there was any underlying medical cause, such as a urinary tract infection or pain that the patient might be having. And also, what often happens, unfortunately, in patients suffering from these psychiatric symptoms is that they get progressively loaded on more and more medication, whether it be an antipsychotic or a sedative medicine. And the problem is it becomes a losing game because they, the more sedated and confused Alzheimer's patients become, the more aggressive they become often, or the more agitated. So we were able in this study to withdraw patients from all the medications that they've kind of been loaded up as outpatients or in the nursing home, and often we saw improvement there. However, if the symptoms were still persisting, then we use the standard treatment, which is risperidone. That's the most commonly used drug for this condition, which is the antipsychotic. And we used, in contrast to the antidepressant citalopram, and our hypothesis was that the antipsychotic would work for the psychotic symptoms, but that citalopram would work better for agitation. And in the end, what we found was that both drugs worked equally well for what we're calling psychotic symptoms. Now, the other interesting finding, which we've also submitted for publication, is that there were some differences in one of the common genes affecting serotonin function. And the patients who had this variant didn't respond either to citalopram or risperidone when they had psychotic symptoms. And the additional effect that risperidone has is on one of the postsynaptic serotonin receptors. So it's not it, and many some of the other second generation antipsychotics are not just dopamine blocking drugs, but they also have an effect on serotonin function as well. So it may be actually through that route that they have some benefit in Alzheimer's patients. I also have to qualify that, we're not, especially on the basis of this one study, right, and in the absence of a placebo control, you could say that, both drugs are working equally well or equally badly. And there's been some question about, whether the antipsychotics are really have, or their efficacy is very modest in Alzheimer's disease, and it's especially if that outweighs their the safety concerns which have arisen. When we first proposed this study, and it was funded by the National Institutes of Health, the climate of opinion 4 or 5 years ago was that it would be unethical to have a placebo in this very severely agitated and psychotic group of fragile patients. Right. The feeling was if they had to be hospitalized for this, it would be unethical to give a placebo. Where things have shifted in the last few years is with the increased safety concerns about antipsychotics, and questions about their true efficacy. Now it would be mandatory to have a placebo again in a trial like this, and we've proposed an additional grant application on that basis to the National Institutes of Health.
Well, I'd imagine, though, that this is certainly opening up avenues of understanding the pathophysiology of the disease a little bit better, given that the effect, at least in this study, was to show equivalence between citalopram and risperidone with regards to reducing the agitation. So obviously, as you've mentioned, with regards to dopamine receptors and serotonergic actions, that there is more to this than just what was originally assumed.
Exactly, and it also I think illustrates some of our flaws in clinical phenomenology. In other words, yes, you could broadly label this as psychosis in Alzheimer's disease, but when you look more closely, it's really not the same as psychosis that occurs in younger patients suffering from schizophrenia. But when all you had, or when your major class of drugs that you had were antipsychotics, there was kind of a belief that we should treat psychosis with, quotes, an antipsychotic, as opposed to alternative therapies. I think the other main message is that although this is the non-cognitive symptoms that occur in Alzheimer's are really the terrible symptoms that families and caregivers have to deal with, mm-hmm. and increasingly these are causes, the reasons why patients you have to go to nursing homes. And then once they're in the nursing homes, as you know, there's a lot of violence. Other residents get hurt, in some cases killed. And certainly, the caregivers in nursing homes, it's one of, you know, the few professions that I know of other than prize fighting where people go to work expecting to be beaten up.
Right.
And, so we've also learned that the antipsychotics and sedatives that were used until a few years ago extremely widely in nursing homes, really overused, are deleterious to the quality of life and in some cases make things worse. And so it's kind of, you know, a bit paradoxical when you have 90% of patients with dementia developing these very severe symptoms at some time in their illness. And yet, aside from a few of us in academic centers, there really isn't a concerted effort to really improve the pharmacotherapy, and certainly it's not just pharmacotherapy. We know that improved staff ratios in nursing homes reduce the amount of agitation. We know that non-cognitive treatments are sometimes beneficial and should be tried first. And certainly good quality medical care, eliminating infections and sources of pain and discomfort. But all of this takes manpower.
Right.
But also it's kind of a public health scandal in some ways that we're using tons of medication in this population without really good evidence, that it works.
Right.
And what evidence is emerging is that there are really severe side effects, including death, that we need to really monitor carefully for and see whether the medication is in fact doing some good, and if we should discontinue it, and even if there's some improvement, and see whether the patient can now manage without it. It shouldn't be that the person is put on it continuously.
Well, Dr. Pollack, I'd like to thank you very much for giving an excellent explanation of, you know, where the use of these medications came from, and very eloquently putting at the end that we have to be vigilant and try and understand what it is that we're doing, and looking at all specific options to try and reduce some of the symptoms that we see, as opposed to thinking that the medication is going to do everything it's purported to do.
Okay, well, and thank you for the opportunity of speaking to you and your audience.
Oh, you're very welcome. All the best.
Okay, bye now.
And coming up, some news items. I'm very excited to go over some of these news items for you on vitamin D, and we're going to revisit the Heart and Stroke Foundation's Health Check program. Two articles appearing in the Ottawa Citizen this weekend, and as well, we'll be taking your calls. You can start calling in now at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to